This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. In the first half of tonight's program, we'll be talking with Sandy Fisher, who is a local weaver and flax grower, and about an exhibit she'll be doing at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. It's great recognition for her local work here in Butte County.
And in the second half of the show, we'll speak with Mahalia Swires, who's on the Butte County Student Board as Director of Sustainability. Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFI supporters and by Neil Yellen, the financial advisor with Edward Jones in Chico. No matter where you are in life's journey, Neil can offer guidance and strategies for wealth and retirement income, college savings accounts, estate and legacy plans, charitable giving, and more. For a consultation or more information, Neil can be reached at 530-345-8913. And he's on the corner of 3rd Avenue and the Esplanade. Neil Yellen, Edward Jones member, SIPC. And we're also made possible by J&J Automotive in Chico, with over 19 years of experience in auto repair and scheduled maintenance. Specializing in Subaru and Volvo, J&J provides everything from manufacturer-suggested vehicle maintenance to all types of repairs, including transmission and engine repair, brake and suspension, tune-ups, lubes, filters, lights, and more. To book an appointment, or for more information, visit jnjautomotivechico.com or give them a call at 530-891-3328. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Sandy Fisher.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and on the phone with us now is Sandy Fisher. Sandy is a local weaver. She is also an artist, a teacher, a writer, a farmer, an environmentalist, and the founder of Chico Flax, which is a local nonprofit which is promoting, and they are creating, actually, Sandy is with her team, Local fiber, local fabric. So local textile. I'm looking for the right word. So welcome, Sandy. And we've had Sandy on the show several times talking about this project because it's such an interesting thing. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always pretty good to talk to you guys.
It's pretty exciting what we're talking with you about today. You have been accepted into exhibition at the Smithsonian, which is kind of a pretty big deal. Maybe you can tell us a little bit how many applicants there were and how many were accepted.
I don't know the exact number, but I do know that out of so many, and I will probably have that number, 120 were accepted in various areas of craft, such as textile art, wearable, decorative, glass, ceramics. So I can't give you the exact number, but it's always usually a pretty high number to have applied.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so could you describe what the Smithsonian exhibition is, what it was entitled? And
I lost some of that. Did you repeat the question?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm hoping that we're having decent connectivity here. But tell us how this project was described and what attracted to you you to it and how you came about applying.
Right, great question. The Smithsonian Craft Show has been going on, this is their 40th year. Mm-hmm. And as an artist, I've always put that kind of on a pedestal as a really wonderful show to participate in. It's very much, they started honoring the craftsman as an artisan. So they put the two together, and I've always liked that concept. So it was always appealing, and I've always looked at it. But this year in particular really struck me as something that I thought I'd like to participate in. The theme this year was called New Directions, and New Directions in Design and Production and Embracing Sustainability. So every artisan that's there, every craftsperson is going to have to think about where their materials come from. And, you know, as you have known in press in past interviews with me, the last 10 years, what have I been doing? I have been growing fiber to make linen. And it just seemed like, oh my gosh, you know, this is just right, the perfect time for me to apply. So that was back in October, November. And what was also interesting, because of the materials I'm creating, it also demanded me as an artist to think differently about my product. For those who know my work, I've always gone in the direction of decorative fiber for the home, mm-hmm. things that you could put on the table and, you know, on the wall, not wearable. But my materials I'm making with my linen are blended wools and cotton that I can't use wool on a household item that's, you know, it's going to be spoiled.
Right.
But so it was more of a wearable area that I applied. So I've been making scarves prior to this application. Scarves, and as far as wearable, I'm not into sewing clothes, so it's just more of an accessory kind of line,
right,
with my things the last year during the COVID. So, you know, it was just like, okay, I'll apply, and literally kind of let it go. And back in, you know, right before Christmas, I heard that I was in. So
that's
I'm
pretty
now
amazing.
Working very hard.
That's great. Congratulations. That's super. I like having this scoop, too.
I know you're in the planning process for your exhibit, but what will it look like? How much space do you have available and so forth?
Yeah, they're 10 by 10 booths. And, you know, I feel myself as, because I like to teach what I do, I'm an educator at heart and grew up with educators. So I really want to let the public know what I'm doing here in Chico and where my materials come from. So if you think of a little 10 by 10 booth, and then I've got photographs. I'm going to have banners of my flax in the field in the center. And then on one side I'm also using, I might add, not just my local fiber, but Northern California materials. A woman that Lanny Estelle of Bear Ranch up in Modoc County has Rambouillet sheep, and it's fabulous material. So I also have woven just using her materials for this the show. And so a picture of her sheep, and then Sally Fox down in Capay Valley is a plant scientist who developed brown cotton, organic brown cotton, and she's known for it. And she's right here, and we're all kind of collaborating together as far as our materials. So I'm representing not only my own work, but other Northern California producers of locally made fiber. So, I've seen this picture, and then my materials with it, my finished goods. So
will you have, like, strands of things like wool and linen and cotton, and you combine those, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Right.
There are no pure linen mills in America, so I have to go with what I can do. And so I've worked with a mill in Ukiah, which has been lots of fun because they're close, and I've gone over there, and we've actually come up with some blends this year with alpaca and wool and my flax.
Oh, beautiful.
And the other, I've kind of branched out of California, but I was looking for finer spinning because the mill in Ukiah can do thicker yarns. And so I've hooked up with a mill in Wyoming, and they've come up with some wonderful 70% wool, 30% of my Chico flax that I'll be using. So I'm pretty excited about that. And so making my own yarns has been a new venture for me.
Yeah, I mean, you've just had new venture after new venture after new venture in the last 10 years that I've known you. You started out, I think, just with yarn, and then now you're growing flax. I mean, I don't know where you got your stuff before, but now you're growing. You have acreage. You're growing your own flax. You're harvesting. Could you say a little bit about that, about how that process got started and how that's going? Because that's really what makes you especially stunning for something like this.
Yeah, and it really it has changed my whole way I look at my personal artistic work. You know, the flax has been an experiment. I mean, one of the things that I have proven is that it can grow here in Northern California. And in researching it, I found I wasn't the first. I mean, it actually was done at right before the San Francisco earthquake. They were actually trying to grow flax in the Bay Area.
Really?
So I was kind of like, oh, that's exciting. I didn't know that. That was a recent find. But anyway, we found that it can grow really well here in our winters. I mean, we've been challenged since I started doing this because we've had, you know, the campfire. We've had, we're in a drought. When I first started 10 years ago, it did rain in February, you know, so now I have to irrigate a little bit. But, by planting it in the fall, I'm not using as much water, and then I can harvest it, say, March and April.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a real learning process because really every year it's a little bit different, but I can tweak it a little bit and it works. So,
How do you do all of that work? I mean, how much do you grow, and then how do you get that all harvested and all to the places it needs to go next?
Well, you know, we have a 3.75 acre farm here, but we only are planting. We haven't planted any more than an acre at a time because it is very labor intense. Once it's grown, I have to pull the flax. There is a harvester that is in Europe, but it's several million dollars. So that's not going to happen. So we've had volunteers. Last year, I actually hired some people. And so it's harvested. It's left in the field to dry. And then it goes through a process called redding, which is a rotting process. And I'm not going to go too much detail on that, but that actually allows me to do this step that would expose the linen that's on the exterior part of the plant. So so all of that's done in a barn, and then once I get the fiber separated from the woody core, then it almost looks like hair. And so then that's clean, and that can go to a mill to be blended with wool, and also I didn't mention earlier, but I am blending it with cotton. So it can be blended with cotton.
And aren't you Using natural dyes, too? Could you say something about that?
Yes, that's our newest expansion at the farm is we're going to be growing a lot more natural dyes. We were awarded a California Food and Ag Healthy Soils Grant when we first acquired the land where we're growing our flax to grow a hedgerow.
Nice.
And when I picked that hedgerow, I picked California natives, but I also picked them because some of them are great natural dyes. So that's been like 4 years now. And so I've actually been able to produce from the elderberry, coffee, the coyote bush, coffee berry. That's been quite exciting. So that's where the idea of, well, I'm growing it on my hedgerow, but what about some other plants?
Mm-hmm.
So that has changed. Also, as I mentioned earlier, this growing my own fiber has changed what I am weaving. But it's also changing how I dye my yarn. Many years ago, I was careful how I did it, but it still bothered me, but I was using chemical dyes. Uh-huh. I don't even touch them anymore. That's just like, no. And so I'm having fun not only on my hedgerow, but I'll go out and I forage in the park with oak galls and walnuts, black walnuts. I might be riding my bike and I see some black walnuts, and I'll come back later with a bucket and pick them up. That's the fun part, and pomegranates. And so we live in a great area where color is all around us in nature, and to bring that and put it into the fiber that I've made is quite rewarding.
How simple or difficult is it to extract the dyes? I'm assuming it varies.
It varies, and there are several great books out there that have helped me, and people I've taken workshops from that. You know, you kind of know what color you might get with, say, a pomegranate.
Right, right,
yes.
Right.
But the variety changes when it's harvested, change the colors. So it's kind of a hit or miss sometimes, but you kind of like, I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, and also, when I also was a little intimidated when I thought about natural dyes, but when I realized one time it's like recipes, and I like to cook. So it was like, you know, that's the passion I like. Well, let's put it towards doing something to generate color. You know, I have to think ahead a little bit. But then what's kind of fun getting ready for this show is that what I'm harvesting is then becoming my palette.
Nice.
Rather than thinking about, I'm going to do some blue pieces. Well, okay, I have to get an indigo dye that in order to get my blue. And not knowing maybe what that outcome is. And then the creative side of me gets really excited because then it's like, wow, I had no idea that I'd get this color, but then that makes me think about what woven structure would make that color shine. So it's a whole different way of thinking. It's quite fun.
And it sounds so creative, and it sounds like there are lots of surprises in it too, and that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So what colors do you have? How big is that palette? And then I want to talk a little bit more about.
Okay, I've got some deep brown, and then the other thing I could add iron as a modifier, and then I go get into grays, and I've got greens, and I get madder from madder root, which I've got growing in my garden. I'm going to wear from pink to like red, to purple, yellows, and did I say green?
Yeah, you did. Oh, wow. That sounds so fun. So tell us where you are in getting ready for this. You talked a little bit about what it's going to look like, the pictures you're going to have. You're going to have some products. And what are you having to do right now? You have to get this done in the next, couple of months?
Yes. I'm doing everything to make it happen. a good example of my day today was, I started the dye pot. And so while that was cooking, I then did some weaving, and then I did some prep for some other projects. So it's never a dull moment. It makes my day really full. And tonight I'm going to probably winding the yarns of the dyed palette that of yarns into a sizable skein that I can actually work with. So
you're still weaving for this exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got the idea of it, but now you're still putting things together. And are you doing primarily scarves? Or I have placemats that mm-hmm. are your placemats, yeah. and I just can't use them because they're too beautiful. So they need to be framed or something. I don't know. But what kinds of products are you taking?
Strictly scarves.
Okay.
Babies, mm-hmm. like I might sew the scarf to make like a cowl.
Okay.
So I'll have smaller items and then bigger shawls and scarves. So that's kind of how I was juried in. So I have to kind of keep with what
right.
category that I'm in. So
right.
Will the exhibit be available in Chico after you're through, or online, or in person?
Well, I don't know what, you know, how they have that. I mean, I do have my website available, but I actually through the Chico Flax website where I will have some things available.
Right.
And
Sandy,
then being local, people can always contact me as well.
I think you should talk to the Art Museum about exhibiting what you've taken to the Smithsonian here locally so that those of us who can't travel to Washington, D.C., can see. I mean, this is a big deal. I think that
yeah.
the wider public should know about this work.
Well, I think that's a good idea. I should. I know contacts, and I should start talking about that too. I'm kind of shy.
I know you are, but
yes.
I appreciate you.
Maybe
me on the radio.
Maybe you should hire me as your agent, and then I can go out. And so you have a lot to do in the next couple of months, but it's all exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And then I look forward to when I get back to getting back to the farm. So, mm-hmm.
Can you tell us the dates and places and times
yeah.
of this exhibit? Because there might be people who want to spend their spring break in Washington, and maybe it's near cherry blossom
yeah.
season.
Maybe. Yeah, I hope it is. It's the end of April, so it
okay.
the show starts on the 20th of April, which is a Wednesday. They have like a preview evening, and then it's going to run Thursday, the 21st to the 24th, which is Sunday of that week. And it's in the National Building Museum, and I haven't been to D.C. since I was a kid, so that they're holding it in that beautiful. I heard it's a beautiful building with big pedestals in it, and it's quite a lovely place.
It's really exciting. And mm-hmm. When you're there, you'll be manning your booth and talking to people about what you do and that sort of thing. Is that
mm-hmm.
is that what the process
yeah.
will be?
Yeah, that's what it'll be, and hopefully making some sales and letting people know that what we're doing here in Northern California too. So.
Well, if you sell everything, you won't be able to do your exhibit at the museum, and so you'll have to come home and make them. You'll have to just make a lot more stuff. Well, we are so excited for you.
Yes.
It's really something that you deserve. You have done an amazing, amazing work in the past 10 years. I've watched it and a couple of times even been a little part of it. And so congratulations. Have a wonderful time. Our guest has been Sandy Fisher. She's a local weaver. She founded Chico Flax, and she's a grower and a dyer and a weaver and a sewer and a teacher and a writer. So it's just really been great to talk to you, and we'll look forward to hearing more about it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from. Sweet the rain's new fall, sunlit from heaven, like the first dew fall on the first grass. sweetness of the red garden sprung in completeness where his feet pass. Mine is the sun.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1.
Our guest on the phone now is Mahalia Swire. She is on the Butte College Student Board. She's the Sustainability Director. And Mahalia is also a member of the Environmental Council of Butte County. Welcome, Mahalia.
Coalition.
Coalition. What did
I
say?
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Let's start off. Please tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you in your studies at Butte? And then how did you get involved with sustainability?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm currently a second semester freshman here at Butte. I am hoping to transfer down to USC in the fall, but who knows what will happen with that. I am hoping to go into the major of law, politics, and philosophy with a minor in environmental sustainability. How I got into sustainability, oh my goodness. Well, I got to BU and I didn't really feel plugged in at all. And I'm one of those people that's really outgoing and I wanted to be involved with things. So I went to the Student Life Center, which is kind of where all the clubs and student government and everything is going on. And, I just talked to the Associated Student Board advisor, Kelly Munson, I was just like, hey, I want to get involved. And she was like, hey, we have, you know, these positions open. Let me know what you think. And at the same time, I was taking a sustainability class. And I saw that the sustainability director position was open. And I was like, great, I want to learn more about it. I want to be more involved with sustainability. I feel like that's the perfect avenue for me. So I applied for sustainability director and I got it. And that just kind of opened the doors for everything for me. Along with my sustainability class, due to being sustainability director, I had tons of opportunities to learn about sustainability. I was able to meet with the UNC Chapel Hill's head of sustainability, and they are the most sustainable college campus in the United States.
Wow.
And that was just one of the many opportunities that I got, and as I got more and more involved, I just grew and grew my love for sustainability until one day I decided that I wanted to include sustainability in my education.
That's wonderful. What does a sustainability director, I'm sorry, I just got a tickle in my throat. What are the responsibilities of the sustainability director?
Yeah, so it's very open-ended, which is one thing that I have really enjoyed. Obviously, we have to, any position on the board has to attend the weekly board meetings where we kind of come together, share our ideas, different things like that. And then from there, it was pretty left open to me. I sat down with Kelly, my advisor, and she said, okay, what do you want to do to make the campus more sustainable, Mahalia? Like, it's up to you. And so some responsibilities that I've kind of taken on myself is getting involved in various programs on campus. I started a little sustainability subcommittee within our board of a few other students who were interested in working with me. And so we attend weekly meetings together, and I run those meetings, and I also take meeting minutes during that period of time. Duke College has an official sustainability committee, and so I am a member of the sustainability committee. I represent the student voice, and I talk to my classmates, I talk to people around me, and I just say, like, hey, what do you think of these various issues that the sustainability committee wants to be addressed? And then I bring that back and I say, hey, this is what students want, this is what I think we should do, and here's how we move forward.
So how many students are involved in the work of sustainability? Is there a lot of enthusiasm at Butte College for sustainability?
So I wouldn't necessarily say that enthusiasm relates to involvement necessarily on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of everyone on my board, on the Associated Students Board, is enthusiastic about sustainability, but for a lot of those people, they can't be on the subcommittee because they have other responsibilities.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same with other students that aren't on the board as well. You know, many of them want to be involved, but they have other responsibilities. They have life. So I try to get their feedback, but on my sustainability team, me and two other students and our advisor.
And so together you decide the kinds of projects you want to engage in?
Yeah, we kind of figure out what kind of problems we see. We talk to students and we say, hey, do you have any concerns? And then we see if any of them relate to sustainability. So for example, one project that we briefly worked on earlier this year is we had a lot of students coming to us talking about the bus schedule. And we figured that relates pretty clearly to sustainability.
Yes.
Because the less emissions that people give off into the atmosphere by taking the buses to campus, the better. So we got engaged with the bus system and got tons of new buses rolling out so that students would be able to conveniently board the bus and get to campus at the times they needed.
So is the bus system, would you say, it's pretty successful? It works well?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. we worked with a lot of our colleagues in the administration and the technology departments, and there are a lot more students using the bus system than there were in previous COVID semesters when the bus schedule was really limited.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great.
I read on your website, in fact, that 1,400 students a day take the bus to Butte College.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and that number had been cut more than in half due to COVID and us having the college deciding to not send out as many buses. And so our main project was getting those buses back out and getting those students back on board.
Excellent.
Are there any other projects like that? That sounds very successful.
Yeah, we're working on two major projects that we are hoping and assuming we'll be successful, but we haven't gotten to the other side yet. Mm-hmm. We are currently working on an Earth Day event, which is going to be on April 21st, which is a Thursday, that we're going to be hosting at Butte College's main campus out kind of between Oroville and Chico, mm-hmm. In Paradise, in that little corner. That's a quite large event that we're working on. We're wanting to get high school students out there. We're hoping to have a guest speaker, perhaps someone from the community that is involved with sustainability measures. There's going to be catering from T-Bar. We're going to have various activities. There's going to be a traveling hemp museum that's going to be shown to students so that they can begin to understand some more sustainable ways to build the products that they use in their everyday life. Mm-hmm. So Earth Day is definitely a big project that we're working on. We're coordinating with the community, with people inside the college, just to really get involved and have as much community feeling as we can have there. And then our other big project that we're working on is we want to bring a community garden to Butte College's campus. And this is a huge project because of funding, because of getting people involved and hiring people. It's a massive project, but when me and the team met kind of to figure out what projects we wanted to do, we were all kind of feeling this weight of, like, students' mental health is key in sustainability. Mm. And one thing that we found is a reason why so many students at Butte don't have good mental health is due to food insecurity. A lot of these students don't have access to fresh produce on a regular basis. They're forced to eat, you know, basically just live off of the cheap carbs that they can find, you know, cookies, crackers. They don't get access to the produce that I've been blessed to have access to. So our group kind of decided that at that point we were like, we want to do something about this. So we want to create a garden on campus that provides nutritional food to those who need it, and also present students and faculty with the opportunity to learn and better their mental health while working in the garden. Mm-hmm. So that has been a huge project that we're working on, and hopefully it will be successful in helping students' mental health.
So will it be created and developed by volunteers, by student volunteers, or do you have any money to pay people, or, you know, how you're going to get materials? Do you have a grant?
Yeah, absolutely. So while all of that is being worked out, and, you know, it could potentially change, at least right now, we're going to be using, pulling together a lot of different resources. Governor Gavin Newsom just put out a program in which colleges can hire interns to work on mental health and environmental sustainability projects, which fits in perfectly with the garden.
Perfect.
And Chico State actually got the grant for some interns, and we are working with Chico State to hopefully get a few interns that will be, they will be paid, and they will be, hopefully, if if all of this goes according to plan, of course, they will be paid, and they will be working on the garden for their internship. And we also are hoping to budget money, as well for some student workers that are going to be hired solely by Butte to be working on the garden.
Nice.
And we're hoping that money is going to come from Associated Students has a fairly large budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping to make a proposal to them to get the funds to do that. And along with that, we also as I kind of mentioned previously, we're getting community members involved with this. We're
That's
working
great.
With a few local community members. We're working with Pam Laurie, who's a local community member, and we're working with Jarrett James and Allie McMorrow, and just lots of people who are involved in activities such as the Butte County Local Food Network to get some volunteer work done as well.
That's terrific. Yeah, those are very powerful people. And Pam Leary has done a lot of work along those lines, and I'm sure will be a great resource for you. That's awesome.
I'm really impressed that you got all this done, and you're only a second semester fresh person.
Thank you.
We read something, Steve read something about the plastic, recycling plastic machine. Is that part of something that you're involved with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, at Butte College in the art department, there is a section called the Makerspace. And the Makerspace is essentially a section where students can go into it. It has hours and you make stuff through various sorts of things. You sew things, you 3D print things, all of that. And one of the newest machines that we were able to get is a recyclable plastics machine in which certain types of plastic are put into the machine and you can make things with them. You can make on a large scale, you can make chairs. On a smaller scale, you can make paperweights. You can make tons of things. You can make plant pots with it. So we are hoping to use that for Earth Day to show both high school and college students that even plastic can be repurposed. use it, because once you toss it out, it's not going anywhere. It's still going to be on this planet, so why not use it for something else?
Yeah.
So we are hoping to really utilize that machine for our Earth Day celebration.
That sounds, yeah, I want one of those machines. That sounds like a fun. You had also mentioned...
I would want a personal one, too, if I could afford it.
That's right, yes. You had also mentioned you were thinking about having a mental health comedian on Earth Day. Is that still in the works?
Yeah, so me and my team, obviously, you know, there's a lot of kinks that we have to work out.
And, sure, it's a process.
And it's early.
We definitely, his name is Joshua Rysdale, if I'm saying his last name correctly. We are still hoping to get him to come out to Butte College, but what we decided is that we want him to do what he's best at, which is mental health.
Yes.
And, so we are actually going to be holding, well, hopefully, this is, you know, still in the works. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. But hopefully, Butte is going to be having him come out as a solo performer and performing specifically on topics related to mental health and mental awareness on a mental health week when mental health is being highlighted on campus. So while he probably won't be coming out for Earth Day, we want him to come out on campus and do a show at some point this school year.
I think you're right that sustainability and mental health, you know, the health of the earth and the health of your food and the health of the environment that you live in is completely tied up with mental health. And so that's an important connection to make, I think.
I've been thinking about it, too, since we learned of this, that doing comedy about mental health, on the one hand, is really tricky, but on the other hand, it might be a really good way to approach it, that if people can chuckle a little bit, even while assessing their current mental health issues, problems, and we all have them, seems like a very effective way to get at them.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is, and, you know, to be 100% realistic with you, a lot of people use humor as a coping mechanism.
Sure.
After the campfire, me and a lot of my close friends used humor to cope with that tragedy. Mm. So I think that that's where Josh is coming from, in the fact that he understands that a lot of people use humor to cope, and that it's a really powerful mechanism to get students to see what he's going for, but maybe have a little fun with it too.
Are there any other projects in sustainability that are going on at Butte or that you and your team are working on that you'd want to talk about?
So those are kind of the two major projects that my team specifically is working on.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of Butte as a whole, definitely there have been projects going on for the past 10 years
mm-hmm.
to make our campus more sustainable. We've been putting in lots of solar panels. Solar panels mm-hmm. basically cover all of our parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do students get to park in the shade, but, you know, solar panel. It's powering our infrastructure. And Butte College actually also processes a lot of its own waste, which is awesome. We have a waste processing plant on campus. And along with that, we have other little projects going on. For example, we are wanting to put in more electric car charging locations mm-hmm. on campus so that it's encouraged and shown to students that we support them having electric cars, and we will make it convenient for them to come to our campus with an electric car. We're also, I wouldn't say that it's particularly a project within the school or within my sustainability task force committee, but kind of something that I've been thinking about, and we've kind of talked about it as a sustainability group, is we have a great connection with the UNC Chapel Hill Sustainability Department.
That's great.
They are phenomenal. They process their own waste. They have gardens on campus for faculty and students that need it. They're just phenomenal partners. And so something that me and my team have kind of been talking about is finding a way to partner with them more often, because obviously they're a huge resource. They're a huge university that has tons of locations, and if we can partner with an institution like that, I think it'll definitely be a game changer for us.
I wanted to jump back just briefly. You, your educational plans, you said you're going to go to USC in, if I heard it correctly, law, philosophy, politics, and sustainability. That's a mind-blowing package and a really interesting one. How do you see that all fitting together?
Right. So, well, USC is one of the many reasons why I want to go to USC is because they have that major all combined together. They have law, philosophy, and politics all combined into one major.
Hmm.
And so my minor will be in chemistry and environmental sustainability. And goodness, how it all fits together. For me, it clicks in my brain. So I think to start off with, I either want to go into law and become a lawyer, or mm-hmm. I want to go into politics and become a politician, and those kind of go, you know, hand in
yeah.
hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a key part of either of those career choices for me is being very philosophically engaged, because I don't think that you can have a successful politician or lawyer who doesn't look at life through a philosophical lens. If you have a politician or a lawyer that only looks at life through the surface level, just basic details lens, and doesn't take time to really consider what their values are, what their morals are, why they have those values and morals, I just don't think that those politicians should be successful. So I think that part of this for me also is kind of coming from a personal perspective of growing up. My parents always told me, like, you know, you can do whatever you want. But I also had the influence of the media, you know, telling me women are meant to stay at home. Women aren't meant to go into law. Women don't belong in politics. Women aren't philosophical thinkers. So I want to become everything that they told me I couldn't become, and yes. to show all of the little girls out there who think that they can't become it, I just want to show them that they can become it. I want to show them all that they have the capability to do it. So that's how I think it all kind of pulls together. And then in terms of my minor, I think obviously one of the biggest questions and concerns in politics and law right now is the environment. It's climate change. And as someone who's passionate about it, I can't just go into law and politics passionate about it if I'm not informed. I believe that I need to be well informed so that I can make decisions that are best for me, for a company, for anyone that I work for the government. So I think that having that knowledge of that minor would really give me the edge that I need to be able to excel in what I do.
You have my vote.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
We're just about out of time, Mahalia. We want to thank you. You're an inspirational person to us. We are elders, and we're not going to see the worst effects of climate change, but it's really gratifying to know that somebody like you is going to be working on them, either as a politician or a lawyer, but an informed and philosophical one as well. Our guest has been Mahalia Swires. She's the student board on the student board at Butte College as the sustainability director, and we've heard about the remarkable work that she and the council are doing. Thank you, Mahalia, for being with us tonight on Ecotopia.
Thank you so much. Have a great night, guys.
Thank you. You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We're going to hop off the air a little bit early tonight for a special edition of North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. She'll be talking with Sheila, McQuaid, I think, or McQuad, from the Food Rescue Coalition. And she'll be on in just a couple minutes. That'll be followed by Ginger Nichols and Radioactive. In the meantime, you've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. Check out our website, ecotopiakzfr.com, or drop us an email, ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. And more information you can get by calling 893-4923. And by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3, and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525. I'm Bobby Tryon, and this is North State Give and Take. Today, I am going to interview Sheila McQuaid, and she is the project manager from the 530 Food Rescue Coalition. And I had interviewed Sheila not a year ago, but I don't know, maybe in April last year, where Sheila was working on getting this 530 Food Rescue Coalition going. And Sheila's going to bring us up to date on all the things that have happened and what the 530 Food Rescue is. Welcome, Sheila. I'm so glad to see you again.
Hi, Bobby. It is so great to be back with you. And I couldn't be more excited to reconnect and talk about food rescue in Butte County.
Good. So let's talk about, first of all, the two things that are the main things that the Food Coalition does.
So we, having talked to you last April, have a lot more clarity on the focus and aim of this project, and the timing couldn't be better to connect with you and get the word out to Butte County about this project and what it's going to offer as being a resource for the community. So when we spoke last year, we were looking forward to securing some technology to facilitate the mobilization of volunteers to transport food donations from food retailers in our community to local nonprofits. We switched gears slightly from our conversation last April and went with securing having a custom app built for our region, which you can imagine took a while and took longer than we thought it would. But we really wanted to get technology that would be high quality for this piece. And so we finally got our app just shortly before Christmas. And so the app is really that piece of technology that will provide last mile logistics for facilitating food donations, again, from food retailers to nonprofits and housing organizations in our community who are feeding food insecure populations.
And an important thing right now is this SB1383. Tell us a little bit about why that's sort of important right now.
There's a lot of talk about Senate Bill 1383 that went into effect. Part of it went into effect for some food retailers and municipalities January 1st, 2022. Can't believe we're there, but we are. And so the main focus of Senate Bill 1383 is to keep organic wastes out of the landfill. And you and I talked a little bit last time about the environmental effects of organic waste landing into the landfill and how that is very bad for our environment. Mm-hmm. And so statewide in California, there is a mandate for food retailers to divert organic waste away from the landfill. And the part of Senate Bill 1383 that this project is poised and focused to work on is the recovery of edible food that would be headed to the landfill if we weren't to intervene and rescue it. So bigger food retailers